And now, more tips with your host, Rebecca, on lifestyle improvement.
And remember that in our program, we present our opinion and the opinion of our guest, and it's not to be interpreted as medical advice.
Thanks for joining us today here on Lifestyle Improvement for part two of our interview with Kevin Urbach. Kevin Urbach is an attorney and a certified specialist in estate planning, trust, and probate law. He practices in the state of California. He is also the co-author of the book, Special Needs Trust, Protect Your Child's Financial Future.
So if somebody is, say, on SSI and you give them cash, the government says, well, if you're getting cash, we're going to treat that as a type of income and we're going to reduce your SSI check dollar for dollar. So if you give somebody $100, they usually let you give them $20 for free, and everything after that is a dollar for dollar reduction off their SSI check. So they would lose $80 off their SSI check. That's true if a parent gives a child with SSI money, or if a special needs trust gives cash directly to an SSI recipient. So the way to handle that is, let's say they wanted to use that $100 to pay for their cell phone bill. Instead of giving them cash, you would just write a check directly to the cell phone provider, AT&T or Verizon or whoever. And that way there's no effect on benefits. So one of the limitations is usually not giving cash directly to the beneficiary. And in many cases, that's usually a good idea anyway. But, you know, sometimes it's not. Sometimes people have full capacity to manage their own affairs, but maybe they're quadriplegic or paraplegic, but we don't want to interfere with their benefit. So it's kind of frustrating for them because they have capacity to manage their own affairs. They just have a disability that prevents them from working. And so now the government is telling them, but you can't manage any of your assets and keep benefits. You can manage your assets, but if you do, you're going to lose public benefits. If you want public benefits, then you have to give up control to somebody else. So that's really the main restriction. Mm-hmm. Another restriction I hear from time to time is you can't pay for food or shelter out of a special needs trust. And again, that's actually incorrect. If the trust is drafted correctly, mm-hmm. you can pay for food or shelter. But again, they treat that as a type of income. And instead of reducing it dollar for dollar, they actually create a dollar amount penalty. And usually that dollar amount penalty is around $260 a month maximum. And so the trade-off then usually is, if we pay for all the food, all the shelter of the beneficiary who has special needs, then they lose $260 from their SSI check. That's a trade-off we almost always make, because at least in San Francisco, paying for an apartment, you're looking at $2,000 to $3,000 a month, plus food, you know, could be another $600 or $800 a month. You can pay for that. They live in a nice place, clean place, and they're only losing a few hundred dollars off their SSI check. So you can absolutely pay for, and then anything else is just basically not counted at all. Vacations, you know, computers, entertainment, anything that really enhances the quality of life of a loved one with special needs. That's the goal. That's the idea, is that this money is set aside for all that. And then also kind of the two big expenses that come from a special needs trust: housing and caregiving. And how are we going to pay for that? And so generally, that's the struggle we have as trustees of special needs trusts. And when we're looking at financial planning, we kind of treat it like that person with special needs is retiring at whatever age the parents die and fund the trust. Because one of the definitions really for people with disabilities in this area is that they're unable to work. So this could be all the money they see for the rest of their life.
So if I'm understanding this correctly, the letter of intent, you know, you basically are giving your wishes. You're expressing your wishes for this person that it's vulnerable, a family member, that you want to make sure that they're cared for in a certain way. The trust has a money element to it. And my question to you is there a minimum amount of money that one has to have in a trust? Do you have to be worth a certain amount before you can make a trust? Or does it make a difference? Can it be just your home and it gets sold and then that money's used? What are the details on that?
There is no minimum at all. I mean, every trust has to be funded with some type of asset. So there has to be at least a dollar in trust to make it legal.
Okay.
Now that's a legal definition. Now, practically, you're probably not going to set up a special need trust for anything less than, you know, I've had as little as $10,000, but that was unusual. Usually you're looking at something more. And a lot of families do, because they have a loved one with special needs, sometimes they struggle because They're spending all their time taking care of that loved one with special needs, and they're not able to go out and have an independent job and earn a retirement or kind of build an estate to leave to a loved one with special needs. So a lot of times what they'll do to create an estate is to buy life insurance on themselves, to say, once I'm gone, then this money will be used to fund a special needs trust to take care of that loved one with special needs. And, you know, usually I'm not a financial planner, but having dealt with so many of these plans, one of the recommendations I always make is don't buy term insurance and think that that's going to fund the special needs trust. It's low cost, has a deadline like, you know, 10 years, 20 years. The insurance companies are pretty smart. They usually know when people are generally going to die. And so I don't know the exact figures, but very few term policies ever pay off. It's there just in case the unthinkable happens and you might be in an automobile accident or something horrible has happened and you die much younger than you're supposed to. And so nearly every one of those does not pay off except for the insurance company. So generally we recommend buying some type of whole life policy, and they're more expensive and it can be more challenging to keep that one alive and going. But that is the one that will pay off regardless, because it always has a cash value and then it'll have a death benefit. And so obviously you need to talk. And I usually recommend talking to a financial advisor who also understands special needs issues.
That makes a lot of sense to make sure you get information from both sides so that you make the right decision. You mentioned something earlier in our conversation, which brought another point that you have mentioned in your book, which is that the definition of disabilities is changing right now. And that's something that one needs to keep in mind as you're thinking about developing a trust, correct?
It is true. I mean, what we're looking at, I struggle sometimes because people come in and they say, well, my son is disabled, and so I need to do a special needs trust. And then when we talk to them, you know, their son might be in a wheelchair, but they're also a programmer at Apple Computer. That person does not need a special needs trust. They may be what we would traditionally call somebody with a disability, but if they're able to go out and work and earn a living, they do not need a special needs trust. So we're looking at people who are disabled and unable to work because of their disability. Those people do need a special needs trust if they want to preserve eligibility for SSI or Medicaid.
So basically, people that are not able to make an income would be one of the big deciders. Is that correct?
It is. And the reason we say that is because that's the definition the federal government has put in place for what they mean by disability. Basically, the definition for an adult would be if a person has a disability that will last for 12 months or longer that prevents them from engaging in what they call substantial gainful activity. What that really means is because of that disability, they can't go out and get a job and earn around $1,070 a month, roughly. And then I always tell my clients, this is those late night commercials you might see. If you've been denied disability, call me, the attorney who will get you your disability. And what they're fighting over is what that definition of disability is to the government. But by and large, the clients we see are presumptively disabled, meaning they have Down syndrome, they might have severe autism, they might be cerebral palsy, quadriplegic. These are the clients I see mostly. I don't see people who, you know, might just barely be disabled or short time disabled or something like that. These are people with profound disabilities.
Exactly. So tell me, just in a nutshell, you, I'm sure, have had the experience of dealing with worst case scenarios and some really great cases in which you saw things happen exactly the way that you had planned them. Tell me a couple of examples of what happens when a trust maybe doesn't work out, or maybe people didn't do exactly what they needed to do to make sure that it worked out the way that they hoped for, and what they can do to avoid that.
So in my practice, you know, I set up a lot of special needs trusts, but I also review a lot of trusts that other attorneys have drafted and review a lot of situations where things are not going well. And I will tell you one thing right up front. The worst trustee for a special needs trust is the brother or sister of the beneficiary. It is the absolute worst. For whatever reason, and I'm not saying it doesn't ever work, but it rarely works, because first of all, usually that brother or sister has their own family, has their own life, and now they're being told they need to pay for their sibling with special needs. And sometimes that sibling may not be as, they're probably frustrated. They have to ask their sibling for money every time they need it. And so, and there's usually a sibling rivalry. Maybe the one without special needs trust didn't get as much attention growing up because a sibling with special needs needed a lot more of the parent's attention. So there's usually some built-in resentments, and just the dynamic usually does not work out well. So I usually recommend, if it's possible, that we hire a professional to be the trustee, and we may put the brother or sister on something we call an advisory committee to the special needs trust. And basically their only job is to manage that trustee to make sure they're doing what they're supposed to do. Let this corporate or private professional trustee manage the trust and follow all the rules and do all the things they're supposed to do, writing checks, saying no to disbursement requests that aren't appropriate, and let the brother or sister continue to be a brother or sister. Let them be a support for that person and not become kind of that impediment.
This is your host, Rebecca, and now we will take a short break, and we will be right back with more ideas on lifestyle improvement.
A unique and specialized approach to spinal care is what you will find in the Advanced Spinal Care Clinic in Graham, Washington. Here's Dr. Craig Lipinski explaining why Nuka Care is unlike any other treatment.
Our goal is that we're making a specialized correction to the skull, the atlas, and the neck of each individual that is custom made or custom and specific created to get them healthy and then have them stay that way.
One of only 23 board certified Nuka practitioners in the world, Dr. Craig Lipinski offers you care that can significantly impact your health in positive ways.
This week we've seen somebody in here who's had a 50-point drop in blood pressure by having the skull, atlas, and neck corrected to a proper position.
To find out more about how Nuka Care can change your life, visit www.nuccawashington.com or call 253-445-8181.
So that is always a bad idea in my experience, is naming the sibling, which is usually the person that the parents come in saying, this is going to be the best person for that job. And then, so that's something I see. Now, another problem is too many attorneys set these trusts up because they're not special needs attorneys or estate planning attorneys who don't understand the unique requirements of special needs trusts. Now, it probably comes as no surprise that most attorneys have software that they can press buttons that let you generate a document. And a lot of times they have a button that says special needs trust. So they'll press that button and then just move on without really understanding how that's going to impact that particular family sitting across the table from the attorney. And what I see too often in that trust is somebody who's not worried about caregiving, housing, advocacy. These are the things the parents come to me to talk about. That's what's important to them. How do we replace me? And the button, all that does is preserve public benefits, which is important, but usually not the thing that the parents are coming in to talk to me about. They're more worried about these other things that are more important to them. Whereas if you just press the button, special needs trust usually doesn't have anything like that. So those are two big issues I see, mistakes I see made. And then, of course, it just always, you can always, the problem I often see is if you name a family member as a trustee, all too often they do not respect the law in this area. And it's hard for them to even understand the law in this area because it might be the first time they've ever had to deal with it. And so they're under something we call a fiduciary duty to the beneficiary. And it's the highest duty one person can owe another under the law. And all too often, family members are breaching their fiduciary duty to the beneficiary because they're focused too much on the, you know, doing things that make common sense, or, well, I don't need to follow that rule or that rule. It doesn't make any sense for me to do. So I'm just going to make these disbursements, and not realizing that they're, you know, unintentionally messing up the public benefits. And again, what I like to tell my clients is if you use your common sense and manage a special needs trust, you are going to fail, because all too often the rules and public benefits area of law make no sense at all. Mm-hmm. You just have to know them. If you don't know them and follow them, you're going to make mistakes. And what all happens too often with these family member trustees is they're not really clear on what they can and cannot do. And so, for example, they might give an allowance to a beneficiary of $500 a month, mm-hmm. right? But we know now if we do that, it's going to cost them $480 off their SSI check. And as the Social Security Administration that administers that program may not find out about it right away, but maybe 5 years later, they come and find out that there's just been this $500 going to the beneficiary all those years. Well, they're going to want their money back.
Oh my goodness.
And they're going to want it lump sum. And that could be a huge blow. And it's called an overpayment. And we see that all too often. Mm-hmm. So another book I wrote is called Administering the California Special Needs Trust. Mm-hmm. And while it says California in the title, I mean, a lot of that has to do with California law on trusts and estates. But most of it is federal law that's mm-hmm. applicable everywhere. And that's really dealing with the Social Security program, which is a Social Security, which is a federal program that pretty much is run under federal law and is applicable to all 50 states. So again, just having them administer this trust, they'll just do it incorrectly if they're not experts.
Well, that's a really important point to definitely pay attention to. And the fact that there is a book that gives you an idea of how it should look like is really helpful, because then when you go to someone, you don't come in completely ignorant. You do have some basis. So your book really is helpful in that way as well. So why don't we talk a little bit more about that, about your book, Special Needs Trust, Protect Your Child's Financial Future by Kevin Orbach. And let's talk a little bit more about why. I think, you know, you kind of talked about a little bit that you wanted to provide a more economical way for people to have access to making their own trust. But talk to me a little bit more about when the moment was when you decided, you know, this is really necessary. I need to do this.
Well, like I said, I do a lot of seminars for parents of basically people who have loved ones with special needs in their lives. And honestly, it really was that end of the seminar discussion on fees. Mm-hmm. And it is so important that something be set up, because if nothing is set up, then basically you could end up costing somebody their healthcare coverage and their financial benefit. And I've just seen too many people come in with an estate that has not been planned for at all. And there are solutions to that, but they are so much more expensive and so much more difficult to implement that they end up paying me, the attorney, tons of money to fix the problem after the fact, mm-hmm. or they just lose the money. It's just gone paying the government. And mm-hmm. you just, you know, that's never a good idea. And it doesn't have to be a huge amount of money. It can be under $50,000. And would that person rather that $50,000 be set aside for that loved one with special needs and last as long as possible to enhance their quality of life? Or would they like to see it spent on food and clothing and shelter that the government would have paid for if even a bare minimum plan would have been put in place? Mm. And I understand the practical reality of trying to set up a special needs trust with an attorney and paying $3,000 or $6,000 or whatever for that plan. But like I said, there's a button you can push that solves the public benefits issue. And really, that's what that trust is in the NOLO press. It's that basic bare bones special needs trust, preserves eligibility for public benefits and doesn't prevent the money to, you know, from being blown right away, which is what would happen if you don't have a plan in place. And it was really I kind of developed it for those people who at the end of my seminar would put their eyes down and just go, I can't afford that. Mm. And I didn't feel that that was right, that they didn't have any option. And so NOLO Press had approached me, and I don't know if you're familiar with NOLO, it's a kind of a do-it-yourself legal publisher. Mm-hmm. So they have how to do your own divorce and how to set up your own estate plan. Mm-hmm. And so somebody else had been writing their book on special needs trust, but he wasn't a special needs trust attorney. So they asked me to look it over. There was a lot of mistakes and things in there that weren't correct. And mm-hmm. so I went ahead and kind of fixed it, updated it. And then every year we annually update it to make sure it stays current with any changes in the law. And so really that was kind of why that book was set up that way.
Perfect. And anyone that wants to get the book, it's available at Amazon.com, correct?
Correct.
And you have very wonderful reviews there, by the way.
Thank you.
So it's already been used by a lot of people. And like you're saying, it is more of a preventive measure to just make sure that you are leaving things to the person that you love the way that you would want them to be set up, and is worth for peace of mind, definitely. If you have a loved one that definitely needs that kind of support, it's worth looking at that option and making sure that that's something that you have explored before you make a decision about how to address the future needs of this person. So tell me a little bit about your website. I know that you're practicing in California, but if someone wants to maybe get in contact with you and have you be their attorney, are you able to go across lines, or is that a state law thing or what?
Generally, you need to be licensed in the state that you're practicing law in. Mm-hmm. So depending on what it is they want, they should really hire a local attorney. And that's why I really like the Academy of Special Needs Planners, because you know, it's a group of national attorneys who do special needs planning. And so you can find somebody local who can help you, who has the background and expertise in doing so.
Perfect. You also have a website, though, that does have a blog, and you have an incredible amount of information there. Would you like to give your website address to the audience?
Sure. It's the name of my law firm. Well, there's a few things. We have a Facebook page, and the Facebook page is actually called Special Needs Trust. And again, if you look at the Special Needs Trust Facebook page, on there, we have a lot of information on special needs planning. Our website is my law firm's name, which is MyersUrbach.com. And Myers is spelled M-Y-E-R-S, Urbach, U-R-B-A-T-S-C-H.com.
I'm glad you did that.
Always a challenge to spell that name, but so if you do Myers Urbach, and then part of that is if you sign up for our newsletter, we send out like a monthly special needs news that kind of gives updates and kind of just general information on for many parents with special needs, children with loved ones with special needs, and we kind of keep things current. We kind of update what's going on in the national scene and sometimes in a local scene. So I think it's a very valuable newsletter that kind of gives a lot of really good information. One thing you'll find in special needs planning is the laws change every year, substantially sometimes. So it's very important to stay up to date with what's going on out there.
And your website and the Facebook provide resources for that, correct?
That's right. That's exactly what we do. I just think it's very important that we provide that kind of updated information for our clients, because there's many times there's just nothing else out there that's keeping people up to date.
Absolutely. That is so true. And that is one of the reasons why we wanted you to come and talk to us. And you were so kind to give us your time. I know how busy you are, because I know how challenging it was to get you to come and talk to us right now. But you were so kind and so generous to being willing to give us your time. So thank you so much, Mr. Urbach. This is an incredible amount of powerful information that I think that could help parents and caregivers out there make some informed decisions about why it would be important to consider having a trust. So as we're ending today, would you like to give us just, you know, I always ask my guests to give a gem, a piece of wisdom that they have collected through the years that have brought them to the place where they're at right now as professionals working in this field, and that maybe could be something that could be used by the audience to encourage them or to give them direction. Just anything that today you think would be a gem of information or knowledge they would like to share with the audience before we go.
Whew, that's a tough one.
I'm sure you got a lot.
Yeah, it's kind of difficult sometimes to have spent like the last 15 to 20 years on this one subject and try to boil it down to a single piece of information.
Right.
I mean, again, to me, it's always the planning. It's always looking at your loved one with special needs and figuring out what it would be like if you weren't there to take care of them, and how we can replace that lost knowledge. And that's why I love the memo of intent, the letter of intent. And I think if I were to leave people with any one thing, even if they end up not doing a special needs trust, which I think they should also do, they should at least sit down and write out a letter of intent, kind of what it is to raise this loved one with special needs, what it is they like, dislike, works, doesn't work. because all too often that information is lost if we lose that caregiver, that person, that, mm-hmm. that primary advocate. And that's the most frustrating part of this planning, is losing that very valuable information. So if I had to leave with one piece of information, that would be it.
Perfect. You see, you did it. You dug in there and you found the gem. And that is truly a gem, because you don't need anything for that except for taking the time to actually do it, to write it down and to put it in paper. So that's beautiful. Thank you so much. And we really appreciate it. And you do have several books and that you have either author or co-authored, and they are in your website as well. So if people want to look at that, and this conversation that we're having right now will be on podcast in the internet. Our conversation will be on podcast in our website. And so anybody can go ahead and listen to it again as many times as they need and get more details on why this is an important subject. So thank you so much, Mr. Orbach. And hopefully maybe sometime down the road, we'll speak to you again when you have another book that you would like to share with us. Okay.
That would be my pleasure anytime. Happy to do it.
Wonderful.
And remember that in our program, we present our opinion and the opinion of our guest, and is not to be interpreted as medical advice.
Thanks for joining us today here on Lifestyle Improvement for part two of our interview with Kevin Orbach. Kevin Orbach is an attorney and a certified specialist in estate planning, trust, and probate law. He practices in the state of California. He is also the co-author of the book, Special Needs Trust: Protect Your Child's Financial Future. If you would like to advertise with us, please give us a call at 877-957-7387, extension 101. That again is 877-957-7387, extension 101. Or send us an email to producer@lifestyleimprovement.com. That again is producer@lifestyleimprovement.com. Thanks again for tuning in to Lifestyle Improvement for part two of our interview with Kevin Orbach. And don't forget to join us again next Sunday morning from 7:30 to 8 for more great tips on lifestyle improvement.